This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Car by two supporters just before the police officers seized the microphone. Zolkowicz was arrested because he did not have a permit, said the commanding officer of the 13th Precinct, Inspector Michael McEnroy. Detective Kevin Zartorski said Zolkowicz was charged with unauthorized use of a sound device and disorderly conduct and was released after being given a court summons. You're listening to Pacifica Headline News with Sidrak Franklin and Leanne Caldwell. I'm Verna Avery Brown.
It's 1 p.m. in New York City. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org. Coming up next, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, a program meant to bring you some ideas, concepts, guests, help you lead a more positively minded life, thoughts, perhaps a new way of looking at things. Today, I do want to look at something with you today, and I think there's something that's been brought to us. It's been a time of sobering moments. Sobering moments. There are many kinds of sobering moments, but today I want to talk about some of these sobering moments, which means there was something that I realized that I don't realize. There was something that I had that I don't have now. We're going to be right back with you, my friends. Small technical thing. I'll be right back. Hi, friends, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here. So we're talking about sobering moments. Yes, we're talking about sobering moments in life. There are, if you think about it, there are times in your life that happen. Sometimes life just throws you a curveball. And what we thought was real, we find is not real. We wake up to the fact that we were kind of asleep. Sobering moments, the obvious ones, the discovery of a deception, for example, you know, a love deception. I was always struck by some places where I've gone in life, especially in the Caribbean, where you'll go and you'll meet somebody who will have been discovered to have two or three different families on the same country, in the same country. And it would be a man who lives and he has one family in one part of the country, and then he goes away supposedly to work for 3 months because it's acceptable to find work in a different part of the country, like he'll be farming or something, but he'll have another family there. And the first family won't know about the second family, and the second family won't know about the first family, and it is not stated that it's okay. It's not, this is not okay. This is considered by each family that this is the only family. And he'll have a third family. We've heard of cases. You know, you've seen things in the news where somebody can have 10 different families around the world and he keeps that balance. Well, when one person finds out, it's a sobering moment. That person says, wait a minute. I thought my daddy was this guy who went off to the army, you know, and with going conquering things, and he's really going living with another family. Sobering moments, you know, there are betrayals by friends. The one you thought was your best friend tells your secrets, to someone else and you hear something about yourself being repeated back to you and you thought you had confided in a good friend? Sobering, you know. It's by sobering I mean you thought this person was trustworthy. You discover that they're not. Sobering moments at work, a discovery. I know of somebody who discovered that his cashier, his very favorite person he worked with for 10 years, for 9 years actually, she was his cashier, and they were like father and daughter. He just thought she welcomed him every morning and loved him, and then he found out that she had been hitting the till, embezzling from the coffee shop, small little Greek diner kind of place. And they estimated that, and she finally ran away when she got discovered. She ran away never to be seen again. They estimated she took over $10,000 from the till. And all during this time, he was having financial difficulties. He couldn't make ends meet because there wasn't enough money coming in. Sobering, boy, it hit him like a ton of bricks. That's the thing about sobering moments. It hits you so solidly. There are medical discoveries that very often will be a sobering moment. I had a friend who got a misdiagnosis of being told he had cancer. A misdiagnosis. And he had to live with that misdiagnosis for 5 days before he found out the truth. Well, as soon as he found out about it, he was the kind of a wise person. He sat down and he said, okay, what's my life? And he settled into this kind of sobriety about life, including whether he was going to die or not. But a sobering moment could be getting herpes or HIV. It brings you away from the drunkenness of maybe an abandoned sex style that's non-careful, you know, and it brings you into the sobriety of, uh-oh, this stuff is not riskless. Sometimes it could be a near miss of an accident, you know. I've had that happen. Where you're just, you know, an inch away from death, from some kind of an accident, a car accident, or your car skids, or... I was actually driving on a road once, and the wheels, the two front wheels, came off my car. The car that I was driving. The wheels just spun right off, and I was looking ahead of me, and I'm watching the wheels, the rubber tires, not the wheels, rolling ahead of me on the highway, and a truck is barreling down behind me. And I saw the truck, and I said, I can't pull over to the right. The truck's coming in. I don't have any wheels. I can't turn in any direction. And just somehow, some angel lifted me for a moment, and I got over onto the embankment as this big 18-wheeler rolled by where I should have been. And I said, phew, why? And to tell you the truth, I had known those tires were funny. Sobering moment. You know, I think I'll check my tires from now on. But more than that, there are many, many positive sobering moments. You know, there are ones that are sometimes hard to believe. A positive sobering moment. Your birthday comes up. Nobody celebrates it. You don't even get a card. Nobody even calls you. Right? I've had this happen to someone I know. And she was so convinced that everybody hated her. And by the time she got home, you know, and she walked in her door, there was a surprise party with 100 people wishing her happy birthday on her 50th birthday. And the sobriety of it was, I thought no one loved me. And now I truly felt loved, cared for. It changed her life. Sometimes it's hard to acknowledge that you're loved. Sometimes it becomes overwhelmingly beyond your denial, you know? You just see it. Sometimes you got to stop fighting it. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about sobering moments, and I wanted to hear from you today because you've got many, and I want to hear about them. Here's another sobering moment, going to war. Think about recruitment that's going on right now for soldiers who are recruited, and they go off to war, and then they get to war and they see death, destruction, disembodiment, you know, I mean, parts being flown all over the place, They're seeing people that they're hurting, you know, that they don't mean to hurt. They're seeing maybe injustice. What happens? War is not being a soldier in a grown-up clothing who, you know, a boy who blows up things, which is what you thought it was. War is different. Seeing people die is very sobering. Watching people expire, it's very sobering, you know, when you see death that closely. For me, one of my major sobering moments was visiting Haiti for the first time. I went to the country for the first time, and I was actually there on a vacation many, many years ago. And I went through the island, and I saw something in the island that I had never even imagined possible, especially in this hemisphere. I saw injustice and crime and pain and poverty and starvation, and I said, something about my life isn't right if this exists, and I'm not aware of it. Sobering moments, friends. How about this? The parent who stops finding fault with their defiant child, you know, they have a kid, and their kid says, it's an acting out disorder. The child is just defiant. The child has no discipline. The child needs more discipline. The child needs, they're being pampered by their mother. But instead, sometimes a parent stops and looks at a child who's hyperactive and defiant and says, wait a minute. My baby here is not being bad. My baby is hurt. There's something wrong with them. I can't tell you the number of parents who I have seen who have come to me or called me or described their child, and they wanted a consultation with me. And they wanted the consultation because they thought that maybe there was something wrong with their child, but they would say things like, well, he's just a little shy. And they would bring me a child who's totally withdrawn, schizoid, hidden. She's very quiet, they would say about their daughter. And they'd bring their daughter in, and the daughter was very, very depressed, but 3 years old, 4 years old depressed, you know. He has a nasty temper, they would say, and they'd bring me in a child who may have Asperger's or something, some other syndrome that maybe have some acting out related to it. But they want to deny it for the long time. See, he's just my cute little boy, and I'll take care of him. It's just my cute little girl. How about this one I've heard so often? He's a genius. Scariest words I ever want to hear about a child. He's a genius. I don't want him to be a genius. You know, I mean, he may be smart, but if he's a genius, there's something wrong. Usually. But the parent who wakes up to this, you know, another one was, he likes to be alone. My child doesn't like to play. He likes to be alone. You know, what I see is, you know, the parents don't want to see that their kids are in trouble. So the question becomes, how do they turn around? And it happens. Parents finally look at their child and they see their little genius. And they see the little genius who's like 7 years old. And at the top of all classes and doesn't have any friends and figures everything out and spends most of his time on the computer. And you look at him and you say, he's not a little boy. And then you sober. And you say, I think we need help. I think there's something wrong. Sobering moments. More sobering moments. You realize that you've hurt someone. There's a sobering moment. Or that you were a participant in hurting someone, like with gossip. You know, people gossip about somebody, and we just tell stories, we tell stories, we tell stories, and the story gets back to the person, and the person is really hurt by your participation in the gossip or spreading the story. When I was a kid, I was swinging a stick, and I hit my sister, and she got a bloody nose. I was swinging this stick coming out of a movie that had swords in it, and I thought it was a sword stick, and I was just having fun, and I felt carefree, and I felt like just, I think I was a ship's pirate or something. And when I had this moment when I saw what my stick had done, you know, I didn't do it, my stick had done it. And then I realized I had done it, and I didn't want to hurt her. You know, I felt so bad for that moment. Hey, you got to be careful when you wave sticks. It's not like that anybody should tell you you have to be careful when you wave sticks. But sometimes something brings you to sobering moments. They're unexpected repercussions that create some kind of an internal awareness. You get that? You have an unexpected thing that happens. It's unexpected, and boom, it pops on you, and it creates this internal awareness. There's a movie out there called Crash. Have you seen that movie? Crash is a very fascinating movie. It's a Hollywood movie about prejudice in Los Angeles and in Hollywood, and I think it's fascinating. The movie is filled with sobering moment after sobering moment after sobering moment. Now, a little later, I'm going to talk about epiphanies, which is different than a sobering moment. A sobering moment, an epiphany is not you have, an epiphany is when you have one of these great awarenesses. They kind of come to you all of a sudden and you say, I get it. I don't want to work in Wall Street anymore. I want to become a psychologist. Or you have other epiphanic, I was making up all kinds of words, epiphanetic experiences. If you look in the dictionary, by the way, the only epiphany ever referred to is, I think, the epiphany of Jesus Christ, you know, the realization that he is God or something like that. But we use the word epiphany, and many of us talk about it and say this word to mean a realization. Well, I'm going to talk about those. But right now I want to talk about just a little while longer, and I'm going to get your calls to deal with this at 212-209-2900. A real sobering moment is not like you get when you run out of drugs, you know, and you say, I'm really killing myself, after you've combed the carpet for whatever crystals of cocaine might be down there. You know, and you can't find any more, and you find yourself on the floor slobbering, and you say, I'm really killing myself. That's not a sobering moment. That's got potential. But the real sobering moment with drugs, like with cigarettes, it's the same thing, is not when you're out of them and you have to buy more. It's when you have them and you throw them away, when you flush them. That's where the sobering moment is really possible. You know, where you suddenly say to yourself, no more. No more. I'm not going to do this anymore. And it's felt. You close the back door. There's no more escape. No more lies. That which you had believed, you no longer believe because you've sobered. A sobering moment is to let yourself go. One friend tells of a story. Of trying to zip up her fat pants. You know what your fat pants are? Your fat pants are the pants you wear when you put on weight, and you have other pants that you don't wear, you know, because they'll be loose when you lose weight. Well, she said she was trying to put on her fat. She was going to zipper up her fat pants, and she realized they were too tight. It was, she said, a felt sense. Something came over her. She said, I was complete. That was it. From then on, I went on this strict right diet, and I lost a significant amount of weight. But she remembered the thing with the zipper. Now, why I consider that important is because a felt sense is not just a thought. It's not a realization. It's not in your mind. It's in your body, too. You feel a sobering moment. You suddenly you wake up, and you feel something different. You say, I'm going to change. Or things have changed. A sobering moment, an awareness. Sobering moments can be life-changing. How many sobering moments have you had in your life, my friends? How many have had? How many times have you made a New Year's resolution, you know, that you break on January 2nd? Like, if, for example, I'll stop smoking, I'll lose weight, I'll stop drinking, I'll stop shopping, I'll stop gambling. You realize you've wrecked your life with these problems, but the problem is the sobriety is in your mind only and not yet in your body. When it becomes a felt sense, when it becomes in your body, you make the change. Sobering moments are a felt sense, an awareness, not just a thought, a shift in the field of consciousness that includes your total being. It's almost a spiritual experience, but different than epiphanies, which we're going to talk about. First, I want to take your calls, 212-209-2900. I'm going to play you just a little bit of soft music, and when I come back, my friends, we'll go right to your calls. Armand DeMille here with the powerful mind, the positive mind, and we're here bringing you ideas about sobering moments. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there. Hi there.
Oh, is this Armand?
Yes, it is.
Wow, that's great. I've never spoken with you before, but I've certainly spent many hours listening to you and enjoying so many of your insights and insatiable curiosity about life.
You noticed?
Yeah, I noticed. Yes, but it's an interesting topic because I mean, there's the. I was thinking there's this personal sobering moments, like, you know, when you realize you've got, like, a health issue or something, and you've just got to face it and do something about it and take responsibility. And then there's also bigger things, like I was thinking, like, WBAI, listening to Democracy Now! Every morning. It's a sobering moment every day.
That's well said.
I mean, I just had a huge one actually last week involving the execution of Francis Newton. I mean, I'm still devastated. I mean, I don't know if you can hear my voice, it's just choked up talking about it. I found out about it only, you know, a couple weeks before, and then as I saw the evidence, I thought, well, I mean, there's just too much evidence here, you know.
Okay, wait. I don't want to go too much.
I had a faith that in the end there'd be a stay, because there's just too much to look at.
In the sobering moments that have gotten to you, is there a tapping sound in the background somewhere?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Is that your tapping sound?
It sounds like it's my phone. I don't know why. I thought maybe it was coming from the station because I was on the air or something.
It might be the old hammer and the anvil, you know, just biding out time. In your sobering moments in your life, the things that really touched you, that touched you personally, directly to you, not just stuff that you heard about, okay? Tell me about something that happened to you that brought you to a totally different felt awareness. Now, I'm not just talking about grieving moments, because everybody can say 9/11 is sobering. In many ways, you know, what's happening now in the Delta, sobering in many ways. But personal, did anything ever happen to you that just hit you with such a surprise that you turned around and whatever you thought, well, it was a tough connection. We'll have to try it again. But that's the question. Did anything happen to you, the next caller or two, that touched you in such a way that it changed you? Changed you. You changed. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Roy. I love your show.
Thank you, Roy.
Thanks for having me. I guess I've been going through a sobering time, and I think I gave someone, a friend, a sobering moment, as I was the one, the friend who was not trustworthy and lacked integrity, and have recently had to examine that.
Well, let's go into that for a moment, because When you say you gave somebody a sobering moment, does that mean that you had a lover and the lover discovered that you had cheated?
You could say that. It wasn't so much cheating in the physical or sexual sense as much as a violation of trust. And we were sort of phasing out of – we had an on-and-off romance, but we were really – good friends, and I know that she had a lot of trust and faith in who I was, and I'd presented myself to someone with a lot of integrity and,
yes. Okay.
And let her down.
So that's the one I was talking about where you hurt somebody, and the sobriety comes to you as well. You see, not just that right. You gave her a sobering moment, but you finally got to a point where you realized that which you might do lightly, like talking to somebody else about her or, you know, not being there for her, really had its effect. And in a way, the effect was on you. It's your sobering moment, Roy, because you're the one who feels the shift. How will you behave differently, do you know in your mind, that you've changed from this?
Well, the particular action, which was a violation of privacy, a severe violation of trust, I will never do again and never give myself permission to behave so immaturely and without character. And
you just never knew it could be so wounding.
Yeah, I think that I was almost doing it almost like in a drunken haze and not realizing that this is happening in reality and this has repercussions in reality, and you'll lose your best friends over this, and you'll, you know, but
what's your best friend's first name?
Her name, well, maybe I shouldn't say it.
Oh, that would be another betrayal, right? Well, whoever she is, I'll tell you what, let's give her a name. I'm going to give her a name let me look down here. I see a name, Melissa, right?
Is that okay, that's great.
Let's say we call her Melissa, and you say right now what you want to say to Melissa from your heart. Just say it now, because you know what we'll be able to do? We'll get a copy of this program, and we'll send it to Melissa so she can hear it.
I'm really sorry, and I know that one of the greatest people in the universe is no longer wants to have anything to do with me. Wow, I didn't know it was going to sound like this.
Go for it, Roy. Just go for it. You're in your heart.
And I would love if somewhere down the line, if I could make your acquaintance again. And maybe just try. I don't know. I don't know how to redeem this. All I know is that over time, I hope to be a little more proud of myself. And I'll keep you in mind in that process. And I thank you for the way you always acted with integrity and spoke impeccably with me. And it's because of that I feel really horrible about doing the opposite. And I'm sorry.
Beautiful, Roy.
Thanks.
Beautiful for your heart. Make sure we get a copy of this. Call my office, and we'll get you a copy to just send. Thank you.
Thanks. I felt good.
Yeah, I could get it. I understand. Thank you so much for calling in, too.
Great. Keep up the good work. I appreciate
it.
All right. Have a good one.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. There are a lot of parts of a sobering reality when it comes to you, you know? At first, there's a thing called cognitive dissonance. This is when you just can't believe what you see. You know, it's like right in front of you, or you hear something and you just don't believe it. And then what happens is a form of denial. And then what's after that is after you have the denial, you say, well, I don't believe it's there. And then you say, well, it is there, but I still don't believe it. And then you have this rationalization, well, it's only there because of. And then that doesn't work, and you feel a shock, a kind of a shock awareness. And then usually there's anger, and then there's this felt sense of loss. You know, oh, my gosh, that which I believe to be true isn't true. And that's a terrible feeling. And then there's usually one more step. There's a blame that usually comes in. So you go through cognitive dissonance, denial, rationalization, a feeling of shock and anger. You feel a sense of loss, and then it's like a recovery, you know. You blame somebody, and then comes this final acceptance. And coincidentally, in every experience of a sobering moment, it's the same as the experience of dying. It's the very same phases. Denial, shock, anger, loss, blame, acceptance. So a sobering moment is something that absolutely changes us, and we're going to talk more about it when we get back. We'll be back with you in just a little bit, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
With you, my friends. This is Armand DeMille. That's Glenn Velez, by the way, in the background from his album Breathing. Hey, listen, we are talking about sobering moments. You know, sobering moments. Moments, things that happen in life that make you wake up. They suddenly say, you know, you've been living a somewhat of an illusion, you didn't know it. And then suddenly you find out, hey, things are different than I thought. And things are different than I thought, and you wind up with all these feelings of denial and shock and anger and loss, but you become different. You feel different. Now, I want to talk about epiphanies and what people call epiphanies. There are many people, remember now, I'm saying that a sobering moment is a moment when you go from non-reality to reality. You believe somebody loves you, you trust them, some evidence comes to your attention that they don't love you, that you can't trust them, you wake up and you say, oh my God, I was fooling myself, this person is not trustworthy. And you go through all the stages, at first you're in shock, then you deny it, then you rationalize it, then you get angry, and then you experience the loss, you separate from them, and then you go back to blaming them for a while, and finally there's the acceptance, you were wrong. In what you were thinking, in your perception, and it's okay. You're allowed to be wrong. You trust somebody. You trust your doctor. Your doctor doesn't care about you. He's prescribing a medication. You know, somebody gave him money to prescribe this, or they gave him something to prescribe it. I went to a guy the other day. I went to an eye doctor who I just thought was terrific for many years. And at the end of it, he told me, you know, and you should take these vitamins for your eyes. And he gave me a free sample card. And I said, they got to him. Him too. Such a good guy. They got to him. He's now giving out samples. All right. Well, anyway. Sobering moments. Now, an epiphany is a different thing. You see, many people have epiphanetic moments. And here's what they call. This is where you get that sudden awareness. aha, I know what I want to do. I want to become, I want to grow coffee in South America. I want to make organic wines. Now, usually people with epiphanies are people who are very ungrounded, and usually their realization is a denial of reality. You see, they see reality, and let's say, for example, you say to yourself, I want to be, you get a job as an office job, and you just feel totally inadequate. You can't add, you keep making mistakes, you just dislike yourself. And then somebody says to you, well, maybe you should be a dancer. And you say, that's it, I want to be a dancer. And so you quit everything you're doing and you go to become a dancer, odds of which, of course, are very difficult if you quit in your adult life and try to become a dancer. But you have this incredibly lifted feeling for a little period of time, and you feel like you found your truth. Epiphanies. Falling in love is kind of an epiphany for many people, especially when it's finding a plus for your minus, which is an expression I use. If you're feeling really inadequate and you're feeling really dumpy, and then you meet somebody and they respond to you positively, and you feel, oh my God, I'm in love. I finally met the person, my soulmate. Epiphanetic. But it's another illusion. It's an avoidance of self rather than moving towards the self. I almost never believe epiphanies. I almost never see something that comes as one of these giant awarenesses in anybody. Shock, I realized I've got to get a divorce. You know, shock, I realized that I've got to move to another country. I have this realization. Those, you know what the secret is? They're all in the mind. An epiphany is a mental construct that has with it a kind of physical release, but you don't feel the real organic connection in your body. You don't feel different. You don't feel, you feel alive, you feel alert, you feel almost manic, which is what most epiphanies go with. But you're not home. Sobering moments bring you home. They bring you down to your real self. Epiphanies bring you away from your real self. You know, I've got to dedicate my life to the Timbuk tree. You know, that's what it is. I've got to become this. I've got to do this. You know, anything that feels like it's an impulse, that seems like an awareness, that seems like it removes you from all the stuff that you don't like struggling with, those are epiphanies. They're cheap. They're easy. Sobering moments, not so easy, but life-saving. 212-209-2900, our number here. We're going to take another of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, hello, Armand. This is Edward.
Hello, Edward.
Good to hear you.
Yes.
Hi. I had a couple of moments. Sobering ones. Hello, Armand.
I'm here. I'm here, Edmund.
When I was 10, can I tell the story?
Sure, please.
When I was 10, my grandfather passed away. But when they told me that he had died,
yes,
they said, your pop died.
Wow.
Because we used to call him Pop-Pop. And for about 5 or 10 minutes, I actually thought my father was dead.
Wow.
And, yes.
And what was that like? I mean, what happened? I mean, the shock is big, but now here's the double shock you got. You got, number one, you got the shock that your father died, and you had to settle into that. And for how long did you believe that your father was dead?
It was about 5 or 10 minutes.
What a 5 minutes that was. You must have felt your entire life being drained out of your body. Is that true?
Yes, it is. It was, like, scary, and oh, my God, I was recriminating and going, you know, lots of things.
Yeah, and but it didn't change your life because there was not much, except it made you realize how frail that relationship was. You know, because immediately you got protected, you got saved by this next moment of finding out it was your grandfather instead. So it just kind of really bounced you around quite a bit, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like it wasn't like a major life changing, but it's very, like, powerful.
Very, very powerful experience. I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Oh, it's
for
okay.
That 5 or 10 minutes of suffering of any child just rips at my insides. So thank you. Thank you, Edward. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Armand. Great
sure.
show.
Yeah, and always nice to receive your emails, too, Edward.
You guys are wonderful. Thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand Miller. Let's take another call. Hi. Hello there. Yep, I got you. You're on air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Oh, boy. I'm shaking. I've been married for 35 years. The caller before this last one really got me all worked up again because I've been working so hard on this issue and I've been managing. But my husband of 33 years, he was 72 at the time, came to me and told me that he had given me herpes. And then he proceeded to tell me that he had had a 9-year affair at the beginning of the marriage. And I was completely, totally devastated, completely unprepared. I went out of my mind. I came to see you. I was totally unable to even articulate what happened. You misunderstood me, and I couldn't do anything about it. I was just completely devastated and in another world at the time. I followed what you suggested on the radio because you did a program on men. I listened. I went into therapy. I found out things about him that I had totally known nothing about. I had been in denial, perhaps. But I even lost sight of what today's subject is. What is it? Not epiphany, but...
It was sobering moments.
Sobering moments.
And that discovery... Let me just stay with you. What's your first name, please?
Well, let's say Beatrice.
Beatrice, it is such a moment, you know, but here it is. Here's what the point of the program is today. And I understand how much you still suffer with this. The felt sense of that for 9 years at least, that which you thought was real was not real, was brought to you by the herpes discovery. You know, the world comes crashing down.
It did.
With that. Yes, the entire world comes crashing down means just what I'm saying, that the fantasy was what was being lived, not
yes.
the reality. Yes.
Yes. But it wasn't just that. It was that when he begged me to marry him, because I had no intentions of getting married, I never wanted to, but I did. My parents' marriage was horrifying. I never wanted. I didn't think there was any such thing as a happy marriage. But he really was very persistent and very charming. But what he said was he had a lover before me, and he kept her.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that he married me and then took a lover. That's what you misunderstood, and I was totally beside myself and unable to even correct it when I saw you. I was a mess,
mm-hmm.
and I can laugh now. Sometimes. But what I did was...
What do you laugh at now? When you laugh, what do you laugh at? What's the realization?
Well, no, just when I think of myself in your office, I was just a mess. I could not even tell you what happened. I'm telling you now, but you thought I was telling you, oh, my husband had an affair, and you gave me a book on married men having an affair. It had nothing to do with me. I couldn't even speak then. I was totally devastated. And anyway, what I did was, I am still in the marriage. All of our equity is in our home. Everything is invested in this relationship. I'm 70 years old next year. For me to leave would put me on such sound financial footing that I decided I don't even know with whom I'm living. And I decided to just start reading and listening to you closely. And you've done a series of programs that have changed my life. But I'm still here. But he is totally unable to learn. He is totally unable to do much of anything. But he has changed his behavior. And that's all I can ask, I guess.
It's
but
quite
I
a bit.
Now know he's a narcissist and he's a psychopath.
Well, that's,
and that frightened me. But
well, you know, Beatrice, I want to be able to take a couple of more callers. But I really, the realization that you've had, plus the way you've worked with it, plus the acknowledgement to yourself, you don't want to make a change, but you're going to stick in it and learn as much as you can. It seems that the awareness has made a real big difference for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was scared with all that psychopathy business, but I don't have to deny it because he is a psychopath.
There is nothing nicer than finding out that the reason that there was something wrong was always wrong in the first place.
Yes. Right? Yes. And your tapes have been invaluable. I am just trying to stay calmer, you know, but I have bad moments.
Well, if ever I could be of help to you, Beatrice, feel free to call me again, okay?
Thank you so much for all of your help.
Nice to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. Yeah, sure. It is very difficult. But let's take another call, 212-209-2900. Tomorrow we have a special program, a noted person coming on who's going to be talking about something similar. We're going to be talking about things related to illusions of the mind. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just thinking, I thought I might be disagreeing with you about the meaning of epiphany.
Hey. Okay. Well, you know, it's since there's no definition of it.
Yeah, I looked it up in the dictionary a few weeks ago, actually.
And what did it say a few weeks ago?
Well, I remember it was something religious.
That's right. It's the only definition. You know,
I remember when I was 22. I'm not 22 anymore. I might have even been 20 or 21, and I was in Greece, and I was playing dodgeball, Greek dodge, with some kids, and I really felt like I had an epiphany.
What was that like? Tell me about it.
It was great.
But tell me what the epiphany was like when you're saying you're playing Greek dodgeball, which tends to lend itself to epiphanies.
Yeah, well, it had to, and I had another one actually recently. But both of them were about the same thing.
What was it about? What came to you?
Well, it's ironic that you said I'm going to be a dancer, but I that's what happened when I was 20 and again, you know, in my 50s now. That, you know, I had to keep moving. I had to keep dancing. But I did become, you know, a dancer.
Yeah, you had to be. So, in other words, getting off your feet because a dodgeball is coming at you and learning to keep moving and keep ducking.
Well, I was on a Greek dance project then, too.
Uh-huh.
I was doing a lot of dancing at that time, but I realized that that was going to be the course of my life. Is that what an epiphany is?
I don't know.
Like you see a moment in a grain of sand and all that.
I thought you're supposed to see spirits over rocks or something.
Well, I really felt it deeply, and that's why I said I disagreed
but
with you.
But you see, here's the point about how that, when you have an epiphanetic moment, and pardon me for...
Epiphanetic?
I'm making it up.
That was good.
You know, when you have that kind of thing, you it's kind of in the mind and it's kind of in the spirit. And you could get those. You get those kind of insights, you know, and you go, wow. It's an insight. But the one that really changes you, is when you feel down to your core that something inside you died.
Oh, I had that too.
Yes, I thought you did. And what was that about?
Oh, that was like, and in fact, I was with a friend and it was, and I think she or I made the analogy of like an onion being, you know, peeled and peeled down to the core.
What's your name?
My name?
Yeah.
Do I have to tell you?
No, you can make one up.
Make
up a Greek name.
Carrie.
Carrie is good. Okay, Carrie, so So what was your moment, your sobering moment? What was
it? It wasn't a very happy one. I guess sobering is never happy. I had gone out of line in terms of, you know, talking to somebody over the phone, and she had cut me short and, you know, said, "You're talking about one of my colleagues." And I had hurt her feelings, you know, of disrespect. And after we hung up, it went down to my core, you know, and I somehow really peeled that onion and just got to some very basic, hard feelings about whether I was a good person or not, or whether I liked myself, or, you know. And I was very lucky. I was with a friend who I was taking care of, actually.
Excellent.
And, you know, that she was helping me through that.
Excellent, Carrie. Excellent. Yes, you've seen both sides of it. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, but I do feel that epiphanies sometimes don't take you away from reality.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Well, whoever knows what reality really is, you know, if an epiphany is something that becomes a thought that seems like a realization of your true being, I'm sure if you try 1,000 epiphanies, you got to get one good one. Here's the insight that I think makes all the real difference for many of you. If I could wish on all of you a sobering moment, I would take all of you who ever grew up with an inordinate amount of shame and guilt that may have been fostered on you by some parents or a society who made you feel responsible in a way that was not due a child. Do you know what I mean? Kids who aren't responsible for their mother's well-being. Kids who are not meant to just sit there and please their fathers. Kids who are not meant to follow the rules of a society or a social system that's unjust. To all of you who are meant to feel wrong, meant to feel shame over your sexuality, your true self, to all of you, I wish one giant sobering moment and an epiphany combined in one. And that's the following. It's not your fault. No, it's not your fault. It's not your fault that people who you grew up with are unhappy. It's not your fault. It's not your fault that your parents didn't get along with each other. It's not your fault. There may be plenty of stuff that is a result of your current neglect or fault that you might have now. But the stuff you had as a kid, it's not your fault. And many of you just carry around with you this belief that you are, you know, that you're the bad one, you're the broken toy. And that if it weren't for you, things would have been better all around you and other people would have been better. Well, I tell you, sometimes it takes a long time to get to that point where you could get that realization, you know. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm here to bring you ideas, things to think about, help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, what I wanted to bring to you specifically is this whole idea of sobering moments. That's sobering, temperate, you know, to get out of the drunkenness of some illusions, is a powerful moment and powerful enough to always be paid attention to. They happen to people. The component of it is that it's felt in the body. It's not just in the mind. That for it to be a true experience that changes things, you will feel a felt sense of a shift. And that shift is to be respected. I wish people would celebrate instead of birthdays. There are many different sobering moments. Make a list of yours, you know. Just make a list of 10 sobering moments in your life. Everybody's got them. You want to send them to me, you can send me a copy at my website. No, at my email, Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, that's my first name, at BrainLink, BrainLink.com. If you want a copy of today's program, you could call 212-757-4488. Thank you, Majid Ali, for your kind words. I feel the same way about you. And you can visit our website at thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM. The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 1 o'clock. This is commercial-free, listener-supported radio. If you made a pledge to this radio station during our emergency summer fund drive, please do honor that pledge. Coming up at 2 p.m. will be the Tuesday Arts Magazine Talkback with Hugh Hamilton at 3 p.m., Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at 5 o'clock, and the WBAI Evening News at 6 p.m. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio guide. Thank you very much for tuning in. A moment, an announcement or two in the next few moments, and then on to the Tuesday Arts Magazine. Please do stay tuned.
Come one, come all to a WBAI Benefit Oktoberfest 2005, Saturday, October 1st from 1:30 p.m. to midnight at the Ukrainian East Village Restaurant, 142nd Avenue near 9th Street in Manhattan. Oktoberfest 2005 will feature artist exhibitions, poets, authors, live music, comedy, voter registration, and more. Live performances include Luis Reyes Rivera, The Mahina Movement, Bev Grant, Billionaires for Bush, Neil Montesir, and Dante. And art exhibits by Ruth Bauer Neustadter and Mike Falco. Kicking off Oktoberfest will be a forum, Media Monopolies and Disappearing Content, with Jeremy Scahill, Aram Grumta, Kim Cotton, and others. Admission is just $10, which goes directly to WBAI. For more information, call 212-209-2869. That's 212-209-2869.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test. This is a test of the emergency alert system. The broadcasters of your area, in conjunction with federal, state, and local authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an actual emergency. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
Although you have made a pledge to WBAI before the last fund drive ended, the drive really doesn't end until you have paid your pledge. Please, if you have not yet honored your pledge, do so as quickly as you can. We need your support so that we can continue to bring you the valuable programming that we offer on a daily basis. So, once again, if you have not yet honored your pledge, please do so today. Thank you.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Arts Magazine. This is Prairie Miller, and on the show today, in the Arts Magazine screening room, a look at a controversial new movie about McCarthyism, Good Night and Good Luck. Joyce Jones.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.